you were lip syncing.
Only if you were actually in the studio. Otherwise, I was just missing. Oh my goodness, the issues never end around here between us and everything else. It's a world gone mad, right? Yeah. Living in chaos, you got to expect.
It's a mad world.
I know, that was a great movie, and if you've never seen it, that's your job for today. It'll make you feel happy. So, let's see.
What's your name?
I don't know. I was just deciding if I should be someone else.
Go for it.
It is I, Mary Sunshine.
It's a mad, mad world.
And I would be Ethel Merman, just like the lady in my neighborhood when I was a kid.
There you go.
You have a voice like Ethel Merman. Yeah. So anyway, I'm Aaron Ryan in real life.
Hi, Aaron. I'm Bill.
We can hear you fine, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, you were
Things
kinda,
are looking up for you.
You were kind of, yeah, I paid the bill.
What's happening in the tractor division?
Well, Pape Machinery is still our sponsor right now. They're located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in city of Shasta Lake. And they can get you into a brand new John Deere tractor just in time for Christmas. Go up and see them. They got a great selection right now. Probably got 40 tractors in stock to choose from.
What?
They got mowers. They got attachments. They got it all going on.
How about those John Deere Gators? You got those Gator things?
Oh, got Gators. Oh, yeah. They got a line of those. They got lots of stock up there. Go up and see them. You can drive them around and see which one fits your fancy.
But if you want small gloves because you have small hands, you got to go to Fall River. If you just happen to be driving by the other store in Fall River, you can go up there and buy gloves. Yeah.
People in Redding and Chesa Lake all have big hands.
Yeah. Well, we'll just leave that alone. We have a doctor going to come on here in just a minute. She can explain to us how that works.
Anyway, go up and see them. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da! How great is that? So we have Kathy. And we have Officer Joe with us today.
Good morning. Or good afternoon.
Oh, and do we have a guest?
And you are the guestest with the mostest or whatever. You're always finding us somebody. So.
Well, I found you the creme de la creme of what's about marijuana in the United States today. And we're going to get to hear from her. And I appreciate and respect this person very much.
And that is... about time we got back to this topic because it's such a big deal. Such a big deal. And honestly, right after you walked me into a thing where I had to show some pictures and a bunch of stuff to the California Water Board. No, the Water...
Water Users
Water
Association.
Agencies. What is it? Associated California Water Agencies.
AQUA, the Association of California Water Users
Man, they got quite a handle going on.
Yeah, they do.
There.
It just well, there's a lot of waterness here, so you don't want to get the right water people. But that whole thing is on the WeThePeopleRadio.us. If you go to that site and you click on the tab that says pot, you can see all the slides on there. So we showed them all of that and then told them, hey, by the way, a lot of you are in L.A. You think it has nothing to do with you. But just so you know, all this stuff with all these chemicals and everything is being grown up here, harvested up here, and taken down and sold in your dispensaries there in L.A. And I'm sure there were many of them who thought, oh, it's just silliness.
Right.
And what was it, 2 weeks later?
Yeah.
A week?
Two weeks later, Lieutenant for Siskiyou County Sheriff stops... a truck coming out of the Shasta Vista Grows, 4,000 pounds of highly tainted, chemically laden marijuana in the back, and the driver said it was being delivered to a certain dispensary in L.A., naming the dispensary, and there's a license investigation going on right now.
Wow.
And that wasn't the only truck. They actually got a couple more after that.
But it was like right after.
Yeah.
I mean, just exactly what we told them was happening.
I know. Crazy.
And there it was right there. So
are they keeping the good stuff for up here and shipping the bad stuff down there?
Yeah, that's
what
they're doing.
Is that what's going on?
Yeah, the stuff that only has spray adhesive on it, they're keeping for here. The stuff that has the carbofuron and all that, that's going south.
Oh, that's going down. Yeah. Okay, good.
I think it's safe to say, Aaron, that now, I with fairly good certainty that 100% of the marijuana, just about 100% of the marijuana that's going into the dispensaries now is probably chemically laden in with something bad that's harmful for you. Unless the dispensary actually has a licensed grow that's actually being physically inspected, and we know all the games they play there. They've got random batch testing. Oh, that's dirty. We'll let you clean it. People don't have it. They advertise it as organic.
Well, now, I thought most of those co-ops all took extra caution and spent extra money on testing and made sure their products were all
It's a good thing
pure.
This isn't TV. The faces.
It's all natural.
Insert faces here.
You know, Roni.
It's just a plant.
Dr. Levitt will tell us a story today, Aaron, about one of her emergency room charges that she took care of, a child. It's an interesting story, but I'll let
well,
her
Well, let's.
Her into that.
Okay, so a quick trip on her credentials. Dr. Ronit Lev, L-E-V. She was the first chief medical officer of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy from 2018 to 2020. I'm positive on this one, she brought refreshing frontline medical experience to the national health policy. And considering what was going on just after that, we wish she would have stayed. She's nationally acclaimed medical expert and speaker who continues to treat patients in an emergency department and hosts a podcast titled High Truths. You can find it at hightruths.com. We have linked that on the page for today. And she uses data to drive change and is frequently quoted in print and television media. And if you go to hightruths.com and you click on the news part, I mean, it's like, the podcast is fantastic, and there are a zillion links to interviews and all that sort of thing. So if you, her medical publications known as the Death Diaries studied the details of prescription patterns of people who died from accidental medication overdoses, giving insight to causes of overdose and directing prevention efforts. So there's a really, Dr. Lev, you've got a really wide range of things and tons of things that I'm sure we did not include. So no pressure, but it's all you now. Good afternoon. Is she in the cone of silence? She's out of the cone of silence.
Hi, Ronit. Can you hear us up here in Redding? I know it's a long way from Southern California. How are you doing?
Hi, yeah. Can you hear me okay?
There she is. She's out of the cone of silence. Oh, where would you like to start us today?
Well, you want to have a conversation about marijuana, right?
Of course. Always.
Always.
And how great it is, right? Yeah, well, natural and wonderful and beneficial for humans.
Yeah, so, again, I'm an emergency physician. I see marijuana poisonings every day. And we have a long time, right? So we could talk about definitions. What's the difference between, you know, medical, you know, like FDA regulated stuff that I can prescribe and what's in the dispensary. We could talk about potency. We could talk about what's Delta 8, the growing brain, why that's important. And then, you know, I always have, you know, lots of cases from the front line to talk about what do I see in the emergency room.
Well, we're kind of here at the front end of all of this. There are a lot of people, many, many people, who really would, they might believe there were chemicals, they might believe it was tainted, you know, some of those things we might be able to convince people of, but I'll tell you what, whenever I have mentioned that there are a lot of emergency room visits due to marijuana, I immediately get massive pushback on that, oh, well, that's something else, they might have been smoking marijuana too, but that didn't cause it. Could you please peel that back for us?
Yeah. And are we starting this conversation?
We are.
Yeah, we are.
We're live.
We
are live, Renee.
I know. It's kind of
strange. No pressure.
Kind of a strange beginning here. Sorry.
All right. Well, I do. I see marijuana poisonings every single day, every single shift. So do my fellow emergency physicians from across the nation. And they see that, and we all see that in a number of ways. Most commonly, we would see psychosis associated with marijuana, and we tend to blow it off. I could just think of my last shift, I had one of our physician assistants see a patient, and he said, oh, this guy's psychotic. He needs a psych consult. And it sounds very simple, and we could all blow it off. But then when I talked to the guy, it's a, you know, 18-year-old kid pacing the room, eyes wide open, not coping well. And when I talk to him about drugs, he uses marijuana. When I ask him, what are you using specifically, he'll say wax. That's 98% THC.
And what's it called?
Wax.
Wax.
Oh, wax. Okay.
So take the marijuana and distill it down to the most concentrated form of THC.
And
if we just blow it off, we're doing this poor man a disservice. Because if he is 18 years old, if he understands what's happening to his mind right now and quits, he could have a normal life. And if not, if he ignores it, if the medical community ignores it, if people tell him, oh, it's good for you, then he's condemned to a life of schizophrenia and chronic psychosis. And we're seeing that in our country.
Well, and can't we even, I mean, I hate to jump the gun here, but by ignoring this issue, when we talk about the mass shooters, when we talk about the harm on our society from letting these people go, like, and not doing something and not intervening and doing something, aren't we starting to connect the dots here?
I don't think people are connecting the dots in that way, because when we talk about mass shooters, there's many different causes.
Right.
There is actually a profile to the mass shooters that I've heard from our fellows in law enforcement, and they tend to be young, single males. They call it incel. I didn't know what that meant. Involuntarily celibate.
Oh, yeah.
And there are a number
associated
with marijuana use. But because there's many different factors, right?
Right.
That profile, adding marijuana, it's hard to differentiate it. But we know, but to say anybody who uses marijuana has become, you know, a
right.
Mass shooter, that's not correct.
No.
But to say marijuana is associated with mental health issues.
Right.
Marijuana is associated with violence. That is fair. We have data on that.
Ronit, we have here in Reading, our Mercy Hospital. Can I say what hospital you're attached at, or would you prefer me not to say that?
No, you could say I'm at Scripps Mercy Hospital, and it doesn't matter because this is a problem at every single hospital across America.
So our hospital reports a 39% intake of patients who are drug tested test positive for high potency THC. Do you have any statistics for your hospital?
We're about, of all the drug tests that we do, so that's a loaded question, like, because every hospital may be a little different in selectivity of who they drug test. So we're very picky. We have a lot of volume of patients. We don't bogged down with as many drug tests on every patient. We order drug screens on every mental health patient. They don't all give us urine. It's not as easy to get urine from people. But of the ones that we send to the lab, about 50% or more are positive for marijuana.
Wow.
Ronnie.
But 76% are positive for methamphetamine. That's a bigger wow.
Right. Right.
We see.
And the combination.
From interviews we do in our high schools up here, about 95% of our students have been exposed to high-potency marijuana in some form in the last month. It doesn't mean that they used it, but they were around it. It was at a party. They may have used it themselves. Their friends may have used it. They spoke about it in depth. And when we go into the schools, we find that the kids are very adept at the use of marijuana today. Are you experiencing the same thing down there in Southern California?
So there's national data about, you know, how many people use marijuana, what percent, what are the past 30 day use, last year exposure use. And we use the data depending our point of view, right? So if you want to say that there's a problem, you could say, wow, look, 90-something percent of our kids have been exposed. And of course, it's going to be a big number. There's billboards everywhere, right, normalizing, commercializing drug use. But if I'm going to a school and I imagine the data, your question is the same as what you're seeing in Northern California and Southern California. But I make a point when I talk to young people is I want to emphasize the social norm. And the social norm is that most people do not use drugs. More and more young people are making the good choice to protect their brain and not expose themselves to cigarettes and alcohol or any type of drugs, including marijuana, until their brain is done growing. And any patient I see that's under the age of 25 or so, I ask them, do you know how old you are when your brain is done growing? And they all know this. They know it's 25 years old. And that information is getting out to our young people. I think that we need to emphasize that social norm, because if you don't, if they feel that, oh, well, everybody's doing it, and so it must be okay. And that's not true. If we look at the, you know, if we look at the actual data, how many high school kids are using marijuana on a daily basis? It's a smaller number.
Right.
But when we make it seem like everybody's using it, then the people who are not using are kind of quiet in the background. They don't say anything.
Sure.
And it empowers the people who are using instead of the other way around. We need to promote the social norm that most people are not doing that.
Good call. And we have to take a really quick break here, but when we come back, I'd like you to speak to the edibles versus the smoking versus the vaping and all the different ways that this is being utilized by anybody, young people, old people, all the way around, because there are a lot of people who think, oh, well, I don't smoke pot, but like I eat all these edible things and all this other stuff, and I'm not sure people are... not sure people are wised up about a lot of that. So from a medical perspective, it'd be nice to give them some factual information. Since they're not getting it from the marijuana industry, that's certainly not happening. So our guest is Dr. Ronit Lev. She is an emergency room physician down in San Diego. You can find all the information about the show and the archive after the fact. Please share it with friends and family at wethepeopleradio.us.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes. Was I unwise to leave them open for so long?
Election time is upon us, and time to vote for candidates who understand how destructive marijuana is for our country, how it harms our youth, hurts our workforce, causing health and psychological problems. Perhaps you've witnessed evil politicians taking marijuana money. Well, there is an alternative. We endorse Jess Harris for Siskiyou County Supervisor. Jess has the knowledge, skills, and most importantly, the will to address illegal dope growers in Siskiyou. Jess has worked tirelessly developing sound policy to deal with the scourge of drugs in our communities. Vote Jess Harris 2024. I'm Officer Joe, and I approve this message.
Today's the day. We give all the secrets away. So
I don't think it's a secret.
Oh, it is from a lot of people.
Well, no, because they just don't want to listen.
Oh, well, it's still a secret. Don't mess up my musical selections, Kathy. All right, Dr. Love, what's the deal? What's the difference, or is there even one?
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Let's do a little comparison, okay?
Sure.
FDA-approved Marinol. This is THC that I could write a prescription for today and for many years for people who have the right indication. I have to do that as a doctor would, which means checking, you know, medication interactions, getting a history, physical, balancing risks and benefits. But I can write a prescription for cannabis today. THC is FDA approved in the form of Marinol. If you look at the package label of Marinol, the maximum amount allowable dose is 20 milligrams. Okay, so remember that 20 milligrams is the most amount. That's the maximum allowed per day by FDA approved. Let's compare that to a 1990s 1 gram joint. That is 50 milligrams for one gram joint of 1990s. Today's 2020 joint is 200 milligrams, so four times as much.
Yikes.
And way more than FDA approved. So that's what the joints are doing. Edibles are another entity completely. They take the marijuana, distill it in oils or other ways, and put it in food substances or drinks. It's not the plant that's grind. You know, I used to think, oh, a brownie is like, oh, you take just the plant and you grind it up and put it in the brownie. No, it's much more sophisticated than that. They take the THC, distill it, put it in food and beverages. And different states have different laws. In California, where you and I are, there are regulations that say the maximum amount for an edible is 100 milligrams per package. The equivalency of, though, for an edible compared to a joint is like five times as much, equivalent to 500 milligrams. So, again, that's 10 times as much as a 1 gram joint from a 1990s. Edibles work a little differently. When you eat them, you don't feel the effect right away, right? When you smoke, it absorbs into your blood a lot faster. When you eat something, there's a thing called first pass effect of the liver. Your stomach digests it. Your liver goes through it. And it can take a couple hours before you feel anything. So people may, you know, eat the brownie or cookie or beverage and like, hey, I'm not feeling anything. Why am I not feeling anything? And then you take another bite, and you can end up in the emergency room. Much more potent, though, the effect is with the edibles than on the joints. Also, when you're smoking, you kind of self-regulate. If people are feeling too much, they can, you know, stop and or go more. But when you're using edibles, you don't feel anything. You can go on and eat the whole chocolate bar and have a terrible effect. And then there are concentrates. Concentrates are THC that is in the forms of shatters and dabs and waxes, kind of like the gentleman that I told you about. You can have 8 grams, and each of these are 80% THC. That equals 6,400 milligrams, or 128
1990s. What could go wrong?
So this is not for mama's marijuana or your 19, you know, the hippies' marijuana. This is a genetically modified plant, genetically engineered food and beverages, and high-potency concentrates that really behave like a hard drug, like methamphetamine. And I've seen the same clinical behavior in patients who come in extremely agitated, violent reaction, and the whole staff thinking this is bath salts or methamphetamines or some crazy reaction, and then they test only for THC. I had one patient like that. He came in, it looked like he was beat up, but he was only tearing up his apartment by himself. Ambulance came. He had to be sedated. He was in the emergency department for many, many hours. And when he finally kind of detoxed from his effect, I asked him what he took, because he only tested for marijuana. Maybe he took something else. We can't test for everything. So I asked him, and he said he took a gummy. And I said, how many gummies did you take? And it was just one. And that goes to another thing. There's no controls in what you're buying from dispensaries. You know, if I go to a pharmacy and I'm getting, you know, 500 milligrams of acetaminophen, I can count on the fact that there's 500 milligrams of acetaminophen and there's no heavy metals or lead or something else. There is regulation. There are standards to buy stuff from a pharmacy. But there aren't those standards when you go to a dispensary. So you may think that you're buying, you know, a gummy, but in that bag of gummy, we call it the chocolate chip effect, that you may have one gummy that has all the THC in it, and then the other gummies may have nothing in it, and you are, there's no guarantee that you're not getting lead, aspergillus, other contaminants. And as a matter of fact, there have been studies looking at that and recalls on that for both smoked products and edibles that have all these toxins in them.
Ronnie, your colleague, Dr. Ken Finn, whom I know you're readily familiar with, and both of you are on ISIC, the International Association of Doctors Advising on Cannabis, he reported that he saw patients that were coming in self-reporting up to 5,000 milligrams of THC. Are you experiencing any of those same kind of things?
You know what? I haven't asked my patients that so much. I ask them because I don't know if they would really know how many milligrams they're taking. People don't really know what they're taking. So I ask what form of marijuana. Are you smoking, flower, are you using edibles, waxes? If I get that far, and I ask how often. And I haven't really made the calculation like Dr. Finn has done. And that's important because then clinically, my goal is to make people feel better and understand what's happening to them. And if I understand how long they've been using it, then I could say, you know what, you probably have an addiction and you'll have withdrawal, which is real. And most patients say, oh, no, I can quit. I don't have withdrawal. But then explain.
Sure.
But let me explain what withdrawal to marijuana is, and then they're listening. It's not like withdrawal from alcohol where you're shaking and seeing pink elephants, and not withdrawal like opioids where you're also physically extremely sick. It's more like withdrawing from caffeine or cigarettes where you get a headache, where you're anxious, where you can't sleep, and people understand that, and then they realize that. And I say, but that lasts about 2 weeks. If you can get through that, you know, then you can get better. And that's important because, like I said, there's many different things that we see. Psychosis is one of them. Cannabis hyperemesis syndrome or scromiting is another regular diagnosis that we see in the emergency department.
That's where they can't stop throwing up.
Yes. It's a terrible disease. And people have died from it. So, you know, you have to take it seriously. There are at least 3 case reports of people who have died from cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. I talked to a mom who lost her son from cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. He died from it. I call it an audible diagnosis. We hear it. I hear people screaming and retching at the same time. Nothing's coming up. They're miserable. They're kicking their feet up in the air, extremely anxious. There's not a lot that looks like that, or I can hear it. You know, I can have my back, you know, to the patient, and I know what's going on. And these are not people who, it's not a weekend warrior. These are people who've been using marijuana on a regular basis for years, and they have messed up their cannabinoid system. Their cannabinoid receptors are malfunctioning. Their electric wiring is misfiring. And instead of people think, oh, I need, and the patients even think, well, I need my marijuana to help my appetite, because they're invariably very skinny people. This has been going on for a while, and they think that they need it to help their appetite, to help their nausea, and it's actually causing the opposite effect.
And Rodney, I'm sorry, for you as a doctor, when you have to treat these people, there's not much you can do other than supportive care. I know there's been some work on people using some antipsychotic drugs. How would you treat a patient that came in with hyperemesis other than supportive care?
Right. Well, that is supportive care. So they're coming miserable, and I'm explaining, I will make you feel better, right? And I'll make sure you're not, you know, again, going to die from this. And I'll give them fluids because they're dehydrated. I'll give them nausea medications, and I'll give them antipsychotic medications because that helps with the vomiting as well and helps calm them down. It's important to know what I won't do. I'm not going to get CAT scans and radiation. These patients have had maybe 30 CAT scans in their life, and they'll say, oh, nobody knows what's wrong with me. And I will explain to them, I'll ask them, have you had a CAT scan? And sometimes they say, sometimes they don't. I'll look at the chart and I'll say they've had a million CAT scans. I'm not going to give you another CAT scan, which is a lot of radiation that can give you cancer later in life. And I'll explain to the patient, listen, keep a copy of your CAT scan. If this happens to you again, bring it to the doctor so they know, so you don't get more radiation unnecessarily. I also won't give opioids. They're in pain and they're asking for opioids, but I'm not going to get addicted to another drug while they're addicted to marijuana. I will want to help them feel better, but I'm going to do it without opioids. So what not to do is also really important. And I may check electrolytes. Some people need to be admitted to the hospital, so I take this seriously. So getting people to feel better is number one. But also, I don't want this to happen to them again. They're miserable. And so I have to explain what's happening to them, why it's happening to them, so they have an opportunity. I'm not going to blow them off. I'll explain to them that this is what's happening. What they need to do is to stop using marijuana, but that's easier said than done, and I acknowledge that. Because if they come to me in the emergency department at this stage, they're not going to just, you know, say, okay, well, I'm just going to quit, you know. Say that to, you know, somebody who has severe alcoholism or severe nicotine addiction. It's like, oh, you'll just say quit. It's a lot harder said than done, and I acknowledge that. But I emphasize the importance. And I tell them what to expect, that, you'll have withdrawal for a couple weeks. Maybe there's medicines to help with that withdrawal. And how to treat symptoms, so send them home with some medications for nausea and follow up and urge them to get help with addiction. So, and acknowledge that this is a problem.
Wow. There's no drugs like Anabuse out there, which is for alcohol addiction. There's no drugs like that for marijuana, which would make them violently vomit
I know there's some under development, and on my podcast I had some of the scientists who were working on medications, but there isn't anything FDA approved at this time.
Interesting. Well, I would be very curious to know how many of the people that you're seeing just are completely unaware or unwilling to admit or all that, that marijuana is the cause of their problem and that it's addictive.
You know, you don't know, and I've been a physician for a long time. I have to give every single patient the benefit of the doubt. Some people may blow me off and say no, they're not ready to hear it. But some people are incredibly, incredibly thankful. So I can't go into a patient encounter and figure out who's going to, you know, even be angry about me talking to them about marijuana and who's going to be incredibly thankful and change their life around. So every single patient gets the benefit of the doubt. And at some point in their life, hopefully they'll be ready to make a change. If they're not that day, maybe it'll be, you know, they'll have to have the experience again. And then they'll think, oh, well, that doctor did say that. And maybe it'll click at that time later.
Sure. Well, I mean, you hear it from so many people, oh, there's no way it could be addictive, oh, it doesn't do this, doesn't do that. And I'm thinking some of the people that come to your emergency room either thought that way or still think that way, and here you are trying to help them not do that. So
fake news and fake science, because we know we have data on addiction. Depending on, again, the potency and the frequency, addiction could be up to 50% or even higher.
Well, and what I think what I'm seeing, too, in the school with the kids is, you know, and these are young kids, and I hear tons of stuff. But it's, you know, you start to have a conversation with these kids about pot or anything, and they're like, oh, my mom smokes it all the time. And they just don't correlate that. You know, if the mom's doing it, it can't be bad.
Right.
You know, and so here are these, you know, 12 and 13-year-olds, this is what they grow up with. They don't know.
When we have to take another quick break. When we come back, though, let's stick with that. And I'm also curious to know from you how much legalizing it in the state of California has exploded this problem, because I kind of think I already know the answer, but you're an actual doctor, and I've only stayed at a Holiday Inn Express, so so I've not even qualified. Oh, my gosh. Our guest is Dr. Ronit Lev. She actually is a dually board-certified emergency and addiction medicine physician, bringing over 25 years of experience treating frontline cases of addiction. So just in case you thought we were just having a chat with somebody who just, you know, maybe finished medical school last week, no, she's got a little history under her belt. You can find this interview this afternoon, commercial free actually, on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Hey, thanks.
This is James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad. Superman,
Superman. Sometimes I really think I'm going crazy in the night. When I hide down in the covers and I won't turn out the light. I think nothing's gonna get to me, but then again it might. What can I do to keep from going crazy?
You can stop smoking pot. Here you go. We finally have an answer to Kim Carnes' age-old question. What can I do? All right. So go back to Kathy's thing and then talk to us about how legalizing all this mess. Did you see
it? I pulled up some data during the break just so I could give you a database.
That's why we take breaks.
There is a California marijuana report published by HIDA, the High Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas. They do that every couple of years. In their most recent report, California youth marijuana use ages 12 to 17. California continues to have a higher rate of past month use of marijuana in individuals aged 12 and over between 2011 and 2018. For ages 18 to 25 for California, California marijuana use from ages 18 to 25 continues to surpass the use of cigarettes, 25.16% compared to 14.5%. So that's kind of the data. And the data also shows that perception of harm goes down. So a perception of harm, like you were saying, oh, kids think it's not such a big deal. As that perception goes down, then, you know, use goes up as well.
Hmm. Wow.
But when talking about kids, you mentioned, oh, well, what hope is it for 13-year-olds when their parents are using marijuana? I think, it's nice to have parents involved in the discussion, but I think any parent would want their child to have the best future, best brain growth possible. And I think that we need to be teaching at a very young age in grade school about the brain and protecting your brain. So if you your brain isn't done growing, like we mentioned, until you're 25 to 27 years old, if you use drugs, any drugs, not just marijuana, alcohol, nicotine, you know,
caffeine,
cocaine, meth, anything, it doesn't matter what, then your chance of becoming addicted is up to 7 times higher for someone with a developing brain than someone my age. And I love teaching kids how their brain grows because it's interesting And you could even show pictures of it. And I could show pictures of the brain neurons. So when you're, I have a little brand, like 2 months old. And she has, like, you know, a few neurons growing, and they're starting to grow. But not many. You could see, like, she's, like, you know, learning how to see and move her arm and different things like that. By the time you're 6 years old, you have a lot of neurons. Your brain, it has too many neurons, actually, and you could, like, see it on slides. Like, you have way too many of these, like, little spaghetti strings connecting to each other. And your brain says, wait, yeah, this is too much. You can see these little six-year-olds running around. They got, like, you know, they're over-energized. The brain says, we got too many of these. We got to pick and choose which of these pathways in the brain we're going to keep and which one we're going to toss. And the way the brain decides that is, like, use it or lose it, right? If you're using your brain to, you know, do music or athletics or language or reading, then those pathways are going to grow and be stronger. If they're exposed to drugs and marijuana or that kind of behavior, then those pathways become stronger. It's not forever. The brain is adaptable. So if people have a substance use disorder or addiction later on in life, it's treatable. The brain is adaptable, but it's a lot better to have preventive measures, because it could take years for your brain to readjust. But that's something that's happening. The other thing that the way that your brain is growing is through myelin. Myelin is the coating of your neurons. Your neurons are like an electric wire, right? Connecting one electric wire to the other. Just like with electricity, if you have a raw wire and you're waiting for electricity to pass through it, it'll go slowly. If it has coating, it'll go a lot faster. And myelin helps neurons conduct and send messages in your brain much faster. The last place of your brain to get myelin is your frontal lobe. That's why they say, oh, the last place of your brain to go is your frontal lobe. And that part of your brain, your executive functioning part of your brain, is in charge of planning, problem solving, motivation, judgment, decision making, impulse control. All those things are important. Why adolescence is a great age for learning and adventures. Also why people make, like, what are you thinking of? Can't you think of the future? Why are you making those risks? Because the frontal lobe is not yet developed and needs to be protected until age 25 or 27. And the other way, should I keep going?
Keep going.
Mm-hmm.
The other way, so we talked about how your brain is growing with the synaptic pruning, like pathways. We talked about myelin. And the other way that drugs can affect your brain is through dopamine. And dopamine is a neurochemical that you need to live. You need dopamine, like you need oxygen and you need water. And you make your own dopamine. But if you get it, dopamine from other places, if you're getting your dopamine from marijuana or from cocaine or meth or other places, then your body says, wait a second, I'm getting too much dopamine. I need to auto-regulate and not make my own dopamine. And now you got a problem, because now your body says, I'm not going to make my own dopamine when I'm getting it from the outside, but you need it to live, and it creates a vicious cycle of you actually needing drugs. This is what addiction is, needing it just not to even get high, but just to feel normal. That's true for marijuana, cocaine, heroin, opiates, any type of drug. Again, you can get back to normal, but it takes time.
So my question here, because we're talking a lot about the science of marijuana and how it affects you. Why is it, as a nation, we are so easily believed? We believe the science on so many issues, but when it comes to marijuana, people do not want to believe it.
I think there's two parts to that question. One is, there are people who absolutely love marijuana. They're addicted. It's their religion.
Right.
Can you imagine telling people, like, not to follow their religion? You'll never change their mind. And, you know, that's the way it is. But I think the majority of Americans are not like that. They're susceptible to whatever they hear on the media. And the answer to that is follow the money. Exactly. We've lived with success, all right, right? We've lived through this with tobacco. Tobacco's great, healthy. Right. All our soldiers are using it. Everyone's using it. It's good for you. It helps anxiety. It really does help anxiety. It helps people with schizophrenia. It actually does. Those things are true. But the harms are hidden, right? Right. Now everybody who smokes understands that there is a risk of lung cancer and heart disease. And if they choose to smoke cigarettes, they may be told to do it somewhere else where the secondhand smoke is not effective. But we finally, after 100 years, got that message across. But it was the same playbook, right? Huge billions of dollars of industry are pushing this narrative. And the same people, actually, are pushing that narrative with marijuana. And so what's one ER doctor, you know, going to talk about protecting your brain compared to, you know,
the billions of dollars
industry telling you how good this is for you.
Right, right. And that's what I say, even when Officer Joe and I discuss this, you know, it's like, follow the money, you know, look at our politicians, follow the money. And that's how their decision process is guided, is by the money. And that's really sad.
I noted you, Ronit, when you...
So were disappointed with that this year.
Yep.
Especially, we had, 2 years ago, we had a bill in California asking for labels.
Right.
We have labels on everything. Your own tax has a label.
Right,
your
car
seat has a label. You watch TV and there's a label. Like, you could have flashing lights. We believe in labels. All we wanted is labels, you know, science, evidence-based labels on cannabis products. And
it got shot down.
California Senate and governor, you know, we're not going to take it. So next year we thought, what can we do? What can we... Since, you know, 1996, we haven't had any laws in California to protect the public from marijuana. The industry has just gone unregulated and unwatched and developed all these genetically modified products and high potency with nobody calling a stop to it. And we thought, you know, what does everybody care about? People care about babies, right?
Right.
People care about children. And we were able to show data that the number one poisoning in our emergency departments for children under the age of 3 is marijuana. We see that in school poisonings in older kids, but we see that in babies. And what we wanted is protection on these candy products for children. Why do we need, you know, Snicker bars that look like marijuana or Weedos that look like Cheetos? Like, why are we doing that to our children?
Right.
Who is that? It sounded like something we could have universal support just to protect children. By the government. Just ridiculous. I'm really upset.
Follow the money. Follow the money.
Ronit, we think
children would appeal to children.
Ronit, we were very heartened when we saw you on the Dr. Phil show, and you took on a proponent of the marijuana industry. And you very effectively took apart her argument about alcohol being more safe, being less safe than marijuana. And we've got about a minute, and maybe you could just talk about alcohol and marijuana.
Yeah, we could talk about it next hour, too. So
that's no pressure. The common narrative is saying, well, it's better than alcohol.
Right.
But if you and that's just a common, you know, it's everybody think, oh, it's better than alcohol. Alcohol is bad, believe me. I'm in an emergency department every day. I see alcohol poisoning. We have the data. We know how bad alcohol is. We're only now gathering the data on marijuana. But if you have a teenager who gets drunk once, they're, you know, it's not healthy for them. But they're not going to get liver failure and die. But if they get high once, they could potentially have a committed life to having psychosis and schizophrenia.
On that note, we have to take a really, we're going to get cut off by the news here. Let's continue that on the back side of the news. And I found a little song for us so you can think about what your life is going to be like if you stick with the old marijuana deal. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I was gonna go to work, but then I got high. Ooh, I just got a new promotion, but I got high. Now I'm selling dope, and I know why.
Why, man?
Hey, cause I got high, because I got high, because I got high. La da 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 da. I was gonna go to court before I got high. Ooh, I was gonna pay my child support, but then I got high.
Hi, this is James Brown, Soul Brother number one. Always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pat Bay Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, and they've got all your John Deere products up there. Go up and see them. They've even got little toys for the kiddies. Go up and fill their stockings or put some stuff
like
under
Santa.
The... Yeah, we got it all. We even got the little electric rider gator that you can drive around and run over the other little kids with.
You could take Barbie on with that.
Yes, you could.
You got the Barbie car.
Yep.
And then you got the little miniature gator. I like it.
You'd have the off-road version. So, yeah, go up and see him.
Whoa. Uh-oh.
Somebody got
that was
ran
exciting.
Over.
Oh, that was somebody getting run over.
Yeah.
I was like, wait.
Wow.
None of us did that. Where did that come from?
Well, Ronit was thinking about the traffic accidents or collisions she was going to have to handle between those two vehicles.
I was thinking about the hyperemesis. That's where I went.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Now that we've all come clean on that.
But go up and see them or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226, and they'll let you drive one of those little electric gators around the showroom and see if it fits your needs.
Nice.
Yeah. Or you can get them online at PapeMachinery.com.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
Squirrel.
Yeah, exactly. God, we're easily distracted. It's probably medication for that.
That was
Doctor
hard.
Left's like, I got to get up there. These people need me.
That was almost harder than the first hour.
Huh? I know. Good Lord. Yeah, it's all about the beginning, isn't it? So our guest is Dr. Ronit Lev, and she has been a practicing physician for 25 years. She actually, I'm going to call it her claim to fame, because that's the part that I'm kind of like fixated on. She was the chief medical officer of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy from 2018 to 2020. How cool is that?
Didn't find any cocaine in the coat room when she was
God,
there.
Oh, my God, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Cracked down on that stuff.
Atta girl!
Yep.
Atta girl, Dr.
Not on her watch.
No. How'd you like to be the doctor for drug policy now?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We won't even walk you into that minefield in case you get offered a job again and they hold this against you. How about this? Let's go back to the alcohol versus marijuana thing, because honestly, that is the one where the regular people, I consider myself regular people, and when people come at me with that, I just want to say, you know what, you're an idiot, and that's really not an appropriate response, because it doesn't really move the needle.
No. People don't understand, and by the way, you guys are so funny.
We work with what we have.
So, all right, how to explain alcohol versus marijuana. I don't know if I did a good job on the Dr. Phil show. I kind of think that I didn't, because I think of my kids say, don't look at the comments. And then I got a lot of mean comments about, like, I wasn't listening to the lady after she said, marijuana is worse than alcohol. So let me see if I try to do a better job. Let's compare alcohol versus marijuana in a science way. So, number one, pharmacology. Alcohol is water-based, okay? So you drink alcohol, you pee it out, okay? It's in the water part of your body. You feel a drug. Marijuana is fat soluble. Everybody knows that. People who smoke marijuana realize that. What is the fattest part of your body?
Your brain.
It's going to your brain. Okay, so, you know, again, alcohol is not great. Marijuana is not great either. But, like, we want to see which is worse. It's like, I say, picking your poison. Like, do I want liver cancer or spleen cancer? I don't want either one of those, right? But let's break down alcohol versus marijuana. So marijuana goes to the water, you pee it out. Marijuana goes to your brain. Neuroreceptors. Alcohol, how many neuroreceptors does your body have for alcohol in your brain? None. What about marijuana? It affects the cannabinoid receptors. We know that they exist. What about the brain? How does alcohol affect the brain? Well, we know that when you get pulled over for drunk driving, the cops say, you know, put your finger through your nose and can you walk a straight line? Your motor skills are off. But if you're using marijuana, what happens? If you get pulled over, you may be able to walk a straight line and put your finger to your nose. But if you're asked, you know, walk a straight line, raise your right hand, and then turn left, you'd be like, okay, I can walk. And
what?
Didn't you sound like the guy in the song we just played?
Or was it left? Do I turn which way? And it affects your memory and your thinking and your timing. So it's a different type of effect on your brain. So you could choose, do I want to not walk, stumble, or do I want not to think? Psychosis is another thing. They say, oh, alcohol causes psychosis. Yes, it does. And we have data on that, but it's latent disease. These are people who, they have what's called Korsakoff sarcosis, and the people who are chronic alcoholics, and it does destroy your brain and causes psychosis, but it's not after getting drunk one time in college, right? But you could use marijuana once in college and have a psychotic episode, and I've seen that, right? I had a patient the other day who was driving down from Humboldt State, college student, driving down. He called 911 on himself. He said his parents were going to kill his brother, and that's why he was driving down to save his brother, and there are bags of blood, and he's calling the police to ask them to save his brother from this horrible thing. At the same time, his dad called 911 on the son, saying something's wrong with my child. He's not acting right. He ended up in the emergency department on a psychiatric hold. Very delusional, very paranoid, very scared. I asked him if he uses marijuana. He did. And I said, do you think, I didn't think he would be able to answer this, but I thought I'd try it. I said, do you think that you're anxious and paranoid? Do you think that that's related to the marijuana? And he said, maybe. It didn't stop the paranoia, right? He was still paranoid. He was still seeing bags of blood, but he acknowledged in his brain that that could be from the drug. And that gives hope. Because he may have this one psychotic break from using marijuana, but if I explain that to him and he's young at 19 years old or 20 years or whatever he was, then if he doesn't do it again, he may be fine and not be condemned to a life of psychosis.
This was his first time?
Yes. I don't know I can't remember if it was his first or other, but it was a very, very serious psychotic event.
Yeah,
he had to be admitted.
Yeah.
To a mental health ward to detox, and then once you detox, and it's not as quick. You detox from alcohol. I'd rather have an alcoholic in my emergency department than someone with psychosis of marijuana, just because it's faster. All right, I'll clear the bed out of the emergency department faster with an alcoholic than someone who is psychotic of marijuana. That takes more time to get out of your brain than alcohol. Both alcohol and marijuana, you were talking about drug driving during the break, they're additive. They're both additive. You don't want to be drunk and driving. You don't want to be using marijuana and driving, and you don't want to do both. So the other day, tragic case, I took care of a 21-year-old who was in a car accident. His alcohol level was less than 0.08, but he also had marijuana on board, and he killed a 50-year-old gentleman on the freeway. Probably didn't even know that it happened. It was altered.
Yep.
He was going to be okay, but he just killed someone. He's going to have to live with that.
Yep.
I don't think he meant to do that, but whatever physical injuries he had, he's going to have to live with that trauma of taking someone else's life at such a young age.
Dr. Lev, we see that apparently the largest part of the population that's beginning to use marijuana is the over 65 crowd. Are you seeing any of those patients coming in displaying any?
Absolutely. So let me think if I remember the statistics, but the statistics for California is the number of emergency department visits for people over the age of 65 has increased 1,084%.
Wow.
Huge.
What the
Huge.
Hell?
Well, so, yeah. Yeah, but isn't this, because I read an article on this, and it is the younger generation telling the older generation, oh, try this. You'll feel better.
I can see that.
You can get off of these drugs if you just try this.
I definitely had, though. I had a grandpa who came to the emergency department and the grandson.
Yep.
And what grandparent doesn't just adore their grandchildren? I do. I'll do anything for them. Grandpa was telling his grandson that, you know, I got all these medications and I can't sleep and I don't feel good. And with good intention, the grandson said, hey, why don't you try this brownie? And guess what? He slept great. Best sleep he ever had. The problem is he ended up in the emergency department because he couldn't wake up. He had encephalopathy. There's no way to detox him. I had to admit him to the hospital because he wasn't himself. And, you know, that's what happens when you play doctor on your own. And I had to explain to the family that were just there in shock. They didn't mean to hurt their grandfather. And I was kind of thinking, like, do I need to call CPS? No, I didn't, because they were victims themselves. They didn't understand. Grandpa has a liver problem. Marijuana is metabolized in the liver. So if you smoke or eat marijuana, young kid, it'll be in and out of you. But in grandpa, it's going to stay in them for 3 days.
Right.
Plus, grandpa needs all those medications because right. He's 80-something years old, and he has liver disease and diabetes and high blood pressure. Those medicines are keeping him alive right now. You can't just replace them with pot.
Yeah, with your grandkid who has no skills. Well, you have all these people at these dispensaries.
Exactly.
I was
advice.
Well, I walked into a business for an appointment, and the lady behind the counter that, you know, I kind of know her. I mean, she's there all the time. And she was talking to her dad, older man, and he was talking all about how his dog, and he couldn't find his dog. And she's like, your dog died like 3 years ago? And the dad's like, no, the dog was just at home. I just saw him yesterday. And she's like, no. And I'm listening to this conversation, and I'm thinking, I think your dad's got dementia. So and then he gets out and gets in his car and drives away. That was kind of alarming. Next time I saw her, I said, hey, so what was the deal with your dad? You know, does he have dementia? And she goes, no, he was buying CBD gummies to sleep. And the person at the pot store said, you know, you should take two instead of one or three instead of five or whatever the thing was. Or here, try these. And the guy was just tripping. Driving around, he was a nice old man, had no idea, taking CBD gummies just to sleep.
You know what? I don't
crazy.
Know why my daughters are bothering with 4 years of medical school and 4 years of malpractice. They could have just, if they want to be a doctor, you just work at a dispensary, get a certificate for a few years.
Go to the dope store and be a doctor. Yeah, terrific.
You know, that brings up a great point. You know, if I was working at a bar and I overserve somebody, I can be sued and held liable if something bad happens as a result of that. When was the last time you heard of anybody at a pot shop getting sued because they didn't actually prescribe it, but they sold a product that sent somebody over the edge? I would think there's huge liability there.
Bill, let me answer that.
I think it's just a matter of time, and we know that from history. It was just a matter of time before we had product liability and false advertisements for tobacco.
Right,
but it took time to get the opioids, and it's just a matter of time before we see lawsuits for marijuana. But you talked about CBD, and I think that that's important because people think, oh, well, CBD is healthy.
Right.
The problem is twofold. One is you don't know what you're buying. So I don't know if that gentleman really bought CBD or if he bought marijuana.
Exactly. That's what I told her.
There's no product liability. With alcohol, if you're going to the store and you're buying alcohol and it says whatever proof, it is whatever proof. There are standards that are regulated across the world when it comes to alcohol. We do not have that oversight anywhere when it comes to marijuana. So you don't know what you're buying. Number two is, for all listeners out there, if there's one thing that you could use with your friends and family, especially older people who are taking medications, is check your medications that you're taking for your blood pressure or sleep or anxiety, whatever medications that you're taking. Make sure before you use marijuana or CBD, you check that you don't have drug interactions, because the drug interactions could be really serious or even deadly. And if you go to drugs.com and check that drug interaction checker, you could put in on the checker your blood pressure medicine, your blood thinner, and add cannabis for if you're using marijuana, or cannabidiol for CBD, and you'll see if there are drug interactions. And there are over 500 medication interactions with CBD, and I don't know if that's what happened to the gentleman who was like, took two doses instead of one, making whatever, you know, I don't know.
Well, his daughter told him to stop taking it, and then his dog was dead again. So, you know, that was actually sad, but a good thing.
No, it's good. It's important to understand when you have a bad reaction what happens to you, so you could prevent it and not just blow it off. So that I think that that's and it wasn't lethal. There are people who have had internal bleeding. People think internal bleeding for marijuana. Yeah, you could die if you are taking blood thinners and add marijuana or CBD to that and make your blood even thinner. You could bleed to death. And we've seen those type of reactions in the emergency department.
Well, hopefully everyone who's listening, this is all going by kind of quickly. I hope that you will re-listen. And if you have friends and family who think that this is a no big deal type of thing, I hope that Dr. Lev's information is really ringing home. We have more time with her. She is our hostage till the top of the hour. But we do have to take a quick break. You can find the show at wethepeopleradio.us.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana safety message. In a recent court case, Freed versus Garland, it was determined both medical and recreational marijuana users have no right to firearms because marijuana use was associated with elevated risky decision-making. It is beyond dispute that marijuana users experience altered mental states that affect their judgment, creating irrational and unpredictable behavior. There is a clear relationship between the bevy of recent active shooters and marijuana use. Remember, let's be careful out there.
I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space.
When we are in life.
And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
And there you have it. It does make you crazy. Makes us crazy. Because all this stuff seems so easy.
Can you say crazy?
I can say crazy.
I can even
say midget
it.
Last week.
I know.
Oh, no, that was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, you can't say that.
I did want to tell Renit that there is, I guess you could call it a bright star out there, and there is a civil case in San Diego where a dispensary has been sued for wrongful death of a girl that went in and got high-potency THC from them, had an episode with hyperemesis, and She suffocated on her vomit and died. And they did file a civil case. Now, it's a year old, and I haven't done a case update lately. But those cases are occurring. And if there's any attorneys out there that would like to talk to me, I'd sure love to talk to you about how you could get rich on the back of the marijuana industry.
God, you would think.
God, yeah.
How can you put something out there that harms people? Do we have any other stuff like that? That we put out there that we know is harming people, and you just get like a free pass?
Tobacco and alcohol.
Yeah, but you don't get a free pass on that.
And they got sued into oblivion.
They basically got crushed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can also talk about Delta 8, Delta 10, Kratom.
Yes, let's talk about Delta 8.
Yes, we can talk about
Delta
11.
Enlighten us on all of those, if you wouldn't mind.
What a tragic case. I'm so sorry to hear that. You know, my heart breaks each time because it's those are preventable.
Yes.
Those are preventable deaths that shouldn't happen. Delta 8. Okay, so this is government playing doctor. When the government plays doctor, it's not good things happen. Or playing politics. This happened from the Farm Bill. Mm-hmm. When Congress passed the Farm Bill in 2018, they legalized hemp, and their definition of hemp was a political definition, not a medical or agricultural definition, was less than 0.3% Delta 9 THC. That's what was written. In Europe, the definition is 0.2%. And what happened is like, oh, well, that's the definition of hemp. Why don't I just create products that are Delta 8 THC? That could, you know, because it's only illegal if I got more than 0.3% Delta 9 THC. So now we got a loophole, and people pounced on that. So if I make Delta 8 THC, that's legal. I can call it hemp because it doesn't meet the political problem. And the result of that is they created, these are synthetically made. Synthetic means it's made in a lab. This is not a plant. I listened to a webinar from the FDA. They say there's not enough plant material to create all the Delta 8 and Delta 9 products that are out there. And people have gotten sick, and babies have even died from these products. And it does make me scratch my head, because for the FDA to approve anything, you have to go through, you know, mice testing, animal testing before you're even allowed to test in humans. And then you have, you know, levels of testing. It takes years for a drug to come out on the market. And yet these Delta 8, Delta 10 products never been tested on a mouse or a rat. The first population to be tested on is us, humans and
terrific.
Children. And we're suffering the consequences. Now, what happened with that? The FDA said, this is not our problem. Congress, you messed up. You need to fix this with your screwy definitions. We're not going to be able to regulate something that hasn't been, you know, studied in mice. What FDA did is put out a bulletin saying Delta 8 products are not approved by the FDA. They have health risks. They're harmful. They have psychoactive and intoxicating problems. FDA and Poison Center received numerous adverse calls. And then I love the end, the way they end it. Keep away from children and pets.
Renit, in your expert opinion, do you think that that the FDA will ever approve a recreational marijuana? Do you think that it can receive an FDA approval somehow?
Okay, so let's split that up. We have to understand what the definition of marijuana is. Marijuana is a plant with 500 different chemicals. Can the FDA and save face with all the other medications and say, you know, something with 500 different chemicals, it could be FDA approved? No, I don't think there'd be like loss of trust for anything they say if they say that. But cannabis and chemicals from cannabinoids may have medicinal value. Absolutely. And I've talked to lots of scientists who are doing research on just that. And they're going through the FDA approval process for, you know, various therapeutic means. And they're doing that with trials and purity and following the rules. And if there are FDA-approved cannabis-based products, why not? We already have that. We have Epidiolex that helps treat babies with seizures. These babies are not smoking pot. They have very rare seizures, and they're getting FDA-approved pure cannabidiol oil. There are, you know, Marinol we talked about, and there may be other, and there may be potential for, there are so many different cannabinoids. There may be therapeutic benefits and something that goes through the scrutiny of the FDA process. I would trust that, and I would read the product label to know, understand the risks and benefits and indication for use. That's the whole point of the FDA. But to bypass that and say, hey, this plant, yeah, it's kind of good for you. It's got some good things. You know, it'll cure cancer. It'll cure COVID. I mean, that's not.
Well, and you just said it. It's like, I would read the label. There's labels. There's, you get it from a doctor. There's dosage requirements. There's follow-up. That is like the number one thing we're missing.
Okay. So if people want to know, I'm not going to tell you to use marijuana, not to use marijuana unless you have a medical issue, and then I'll tell you about it. But if you want to know and understand the real dangers, if you want to read about the dangers, not from the industry that's trying to make a profit off of you, then read the FDA label on FDA-approved cannabis, THC. And you could just go to your web browser and put in cannabis FDA label and read the side effects. And you will read about psychosis and vomiting and drug interactions. It's all right there. The research has been done already. And you could do that for CBD. Go to your web browser, put in cannabidiol FDA label, and then you'll read about liver problems and suicidal ideations. And it's right there. If you want to use CBD, you should just read the label, make an informed decision, and get your liver enzymes checked once in a while.
You know, speaking of CBD, up until about a year ago, it seemed like you go into a drugstore and everything from vitamins to shampoo had CBD in it, and you go in and look for it now,
or you thought that it had CBD in it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Exactly. But if you go in now, that's not splashed all over the label anymore. You don't see a ton of products with CBD anymore, and I'm wondering why that is. I know the market, the marijuana market in Oregon absolutely crashed because of overproduction and illegal production.
Oh.
And a lot of these outfits that were growing it commercially up there are out of business because there's no controls. But I'm just wondering if that what's going on with the CBD market?
I don't know, but whenever I don't know, I'd say probably follow the money.
and I'd love to answer that question for all of you. And it has to do with online sales. And online sales have exploded.
There were several studies on CBD products that were sold that had impurities, including pesticides and iron. And people were buying CBD from Amazon or wherever. Don't really know what they're buying.
Yeah.
The one thing I could tell listeners are, and this is true for any herbal supplement. You know, I take vitamin D for vitamin D deficiency. So how do I know that the vitamin D I'm buying at Costco, Walmart, Walgreens is really vitamin D, 5,000 international units? I buy the label that has a USP label on the bottle. If that company went through the trouble to go through a USP certification, then I could trust that really has 5,000 international units. And that's true for any, if you're buying zinc or whatever supplements that you're getting, if you see a USP label, that, you know, you could trust that. Oh,
that's
product.
Good advice.
And Dr. Lev, I spoke over you, and maybe you didn't hear my answer, and I said, I was answering Bill's question, and I said, our investigations is that marijuana is now being sold online illegally across the United States, and it's very, very easy to purchase it. You just Google it, and you can get it sent to you by USPS or FedEx or UPS, and the feds are not doing a lot about stopping it right now. So that's going on.
Yeah, that's crazy because, Postal Service.
Not probably marijuana, but probably all the psychedelics. I've had patients who come in and emergency department with psychosis from severe. I had this one lady that last shift. She cut her neck and her wrists. I had to admit her actually to the trauma unit from these psychedelic products. And
she freaked out and tried to cut her own neck and her own wrists.
Yes, hearing voices that told her that she needs to do that in order to save her boyfriend's life. Right. So, psychosis is a terrible, terrible disease.
Okay. For the people around you.
Yeah. I wish it was that easy to get my prescription medications as it is to get the.
Yeah, we had a question on our chat line here about interactions with the vaccine, the mRNA vaccines. Have you heard of any interactions with marijuana and the COVID vaccine?
I do not know. I don't know about it.
Okay.
I'm not sure of the interactions. I don't think it would be in that drug interaction checker either.
So based on what you've seen...
In general, anything that goes through the liver has potential because marijuana and CBD is metabolized in the liver. So if it's metabolized in the liver, then it could be a problem. Is the mRNA vaccine metabolized in the liver? I don't think so, but I don't really know.
Ronit, isn't it true that currently, like Epidiolex and Marinol, that is only good for a very, very small percentage of the population, single digit. Do you see that the emerging studies on marijuana will produce great strides in medicine for a variety of legitimate medical reasons? Do you think that's out there, or do you think that it's pretty limited?
I'm kind of a skeptic on that. It's hard for me to be excited about any new medications unless it's something that doesn't exist. So if you're telling me, oh, this will be good for nausea, it's like, well, I got a dozen medications that are good for nausea. You tell me this is going to be good for multiple sclerosis, well, it's like, well, I have already a bunch of other medications that I could use for multiple sclerosis. But if you tell me this is something that could use for withdrawal of marijuana, well, I got nothing right now. So I may be excited about that. If this is going to be a drug that is good for the patient who I just mentioned who's high in the emergency department, they're psychotic, I'm going to have to admit them. They're going to be in the hospital for 3-5 days before they detox, but now I have a medication that can counter that effect, then I'm excited about those kind of medications.
Most patients tell us when we talk to them about marijuana, they say that it's an effective pain medication for them, and that's the reason they smoke it. And when I talk to your colleagues like Dr. Finn is a pain specialist, he said we have much better drugs that we can give than marijuana that are effective for pain, and that marijuana for pain is actually an ineffective drug. Do you concur? I tried to use a medical term for you, like
that
we were
good.
In surgery.
Do you concur?
Do you concur, doctor?
Doctor.
I concur, doctor. Dr. Finn is the pain specialist, and I'll tell you what I see in the emergency department. People believe that marijuana is going to help their pain, and there are a lot of, that's probably number one reason people say that they need marijuana as a quote-unquote medicine. But in reality, I think it's probably treating an anxiety and an addiction. They feel that they need it. And when people come into emergency department and they're hurt, you know, they stub their toe or they break their arm, the people who are using marijuana have a much less ability to self-monitor their own pain, and they need a lot more opioids and a lot longer time in rehabbing from whatever illness or surgery that they have. And studies have shown that as well. Even to the effect that if you're going to have surgery, there's a universal screening advisory that anybody who gets surgery should be screened for marijuana use because that can affect the amount of anesthesia they need. They need more. So it's kind of having a counter effect, but the people believe, this is a perception, they believe that it's helping their pain, even though the data, the science, and their behavior does not show that.
What are some of the physical attributes? And we're going to go to break here. We're going to go to break.
Way to transition there, Dr. Joe.
Okay.
We took the words right out of his
all
mouth.
Right, just beat me up. All right, I'll go back to my box now.
It's just like we've always heard. We did take the words right out of his mouth. We'll be right back, though. And we do have a burning question for you. Our conversation is with Dr. Ronit Lev. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm already spinning for all the sorrow in the past.
bill. You can keep your pills, friend. It's all going to pot. I got $100 bill. You can keep your pills, friend, because it's all going to pot.
Hi, this is James Brown, Soul Brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad. Super bad. Super bad. You know I'm here for the party.
Yep, it's all fun and games until you're there for the party, and then it all goes wrong. All right, so we have given Officer Joe enough time to collect himself, get the words back in his mouth. Are you ready?
I had to remember what they were, but I have. And Dr. Lev, I'm taking you back to your first year of medical school and paramedicine, and I'm going to ask you about the physical attributes of someone under the influence. And it's important because we as peace officers, we go through an 80-hour class for drug recognition training, and when we pull somebody over for being under the influence and we suspect there's marijuana, we have to go through a complete physical set of signs and symptoms to be part of our whether we're going to make an arrest for being under the influence of marijuana. So let's talk about some of these signs and symptoms. Someone who's under the influence of marijuana, blood pressure up or down?
It all depends on the amount, but first of all, thank you, because I don't want to share the road or risk my life with people who are under the influence of marijuana. It does change vision, perception, timing. Blood pressure, again, you're not going to be out in the field checking blood pressures, and it may not be affected, and it depends on how much. If you're taking high potency a lot, all of a sudden your blood pressure may be high because it's acting as a stimulant. Your blood pressure, heart rate may be way high. But I had a guy who waxed marijuana and he went into complete cardiac collapse. His blood pressure dropped and he needed to be intubated in the ICU and on blood pressure support. So everything is dose dependent. It's not so clear cut.
Okay, pulse. How about pulse? Up or down?
Again, it depends on the amount. It could be, you know, if you don't take much, it may be nothing. If you're using all of a sudden as a stimulant, it would be high.
Respirations.
Again, probably not affected as
good
much.
Thing he became a policeman and not a doctor.
Actually, just so Dr. Lev knows, we do take blood pressures. We take usually in the station, but sometimes in the field on people who are under the influence of marijuana.
Really?
Interesting.
Yep.
Didn't know that.
Yep. Okay, so we've got blood pressure, pulse, respiration, skin signs. Any change?
Yeah, it depends on the amount. And, I think it's hard for law enforcement to be officers just to do that, because there's so many, a lot of times people you're seeing, you don't know what they're on. You don't know if it's marijuana. Chances are it's mixed.
Absolutely. Poly drug use. That's absolutely what we see in the field.
So it'd be mixed marijuana and meth or just marijuana. If somebody is diaphoretic, that's a red sign that something's not right.
For those of us who didn't go to medical school and are not policemen, what's a diaphoretic?
Diaphoretic, sorry, moist.
Sweating for those, you know, glowing for women, sweating for men.
So if I run into somebody who's sweating a lot and uses the word dude, is that...
you've got probably...
Good chance.
Up here, maybe it's
you
meth.
You go to probably line meth. Probably throw meth. Mama from the train. The night was diaphoretic. The new word.
Okay, blood pressure, pulse, respiration.
Diaphoretic. Now you got to use it somehow this
yeah,
week.
Yeah, I did.
Right.
Just you now.
Diaphoretic.
Blood pressure, pulse, respiration, skin signs. Oh, the big one, level of consciousness.
That's huge. Again, and it's not going to tell you if someone's diaphoretic or their level of consciousness is off. It won't tell you what drug they're on. It'll tell you that they're off, right? And then you need to do testing to figure out what they're taking.
And your primary test in the hospital, you're going for urine?
Well, first of all, we don't test everybody because our goals is different, right? As an officer, you're like, okay, well, I want to make sure the streets are safe for other people and following the law and not endangering, risking others. My goal in the emergency department is to make sure that people live and are better and understand what happened to them and treat and prevent. So I may not need a test, but if I do a test, it's a urine test. And urine tests are not great for marijuana, but they're there. And like I said, you know, more than 50% of people that we test are actually positive.
Is that because of the metabolites and how they're used in the body?
Right. So the people who use marijuana more often, remember it was fat soluble, so it goes to the brain, lives around in the liver and storage cells for a longer. So it could be, they say people who use chronic marijuana all the time, every single day, they could test positive for even up to a month afterwards. But again, it's measurement. It's not going to be way up high for a month after you use marijuana if you haven't used it. It may be there, but it'd be a very low amount. So it's never like a clear cut answer. You have to, you know, make estimates.
So, Ronit, I kind of have a sense when someone gets high, the actual, you know, what happens in what space of time. As a doctor, what do you see? So someone uses, for example, let's say they use honey oil, high potency honey oil, and so that's in their body. What is happening to them physiologically at that point? And what time span, as far as you're aware?
So let me answer that for the drug driving, right? So because we've done studies of that, where we've taken healthy volunteers, having them smoke marijuana or use edibles and put them in a simulator and looked at their ability to drive, their hand motor coordination, and also their perception if they feel like they're good enough to drive. And those studies have showed that if you smoke marijuana, you probably shouldn't drive for 4.5 hours. Because under 4.5 hours, you may feel like you're fine and get behind the wheel, and you don't have a perception that you're impaired, but you are impaired according to these studies of hand motor coordination, you know, stop. They may actually do this in a car simulator. For edibles, it is longer, like 8 hours or longer, again, because it takes longer for you to get in and to get it out of your system. And again, it affects your vision, hand-eye coordination, memory, ability to process thinking. It's different than alcohol, right? We talk about that. And I have a drug-driving prosecutor who says, get your beer goggles off when you're thinking about marijuana and other drugs. It's what happens with alcohol that, you know, law enforcement is very familiar with. Marijuana and drugs act differently in your inability to drive. So I think that the more important question is level of impairment. Is your thinking and motor skills affected in a way that impair your driving from whatever drug? I don't care what drug it is, whether it's alcohol, marijuana, your prescription Xanax, or it doesn't matter what medication it is. If you're impaired, then you shouldn't be driving.
Cumulative effects physiologically on the body of marijuana, what are they?
Yeah, so we know, and the most common would be marijuana and alcohol if we're talking about driving, that if 0.08 is a legal limit for alcohol, if you add marijuana to that, then maybe the legal limit needs to be 0.05. Again, depending on how much marijuana and potency that is used. So that is definitely additive effect, and we're seeing that in fatality data for motor vehicle collisions where while alcohol is still now ahead of marijuana is a close second for fatalities, and the combination is definitely deadly.
Isn't it true that marijuana, well, one of the classic signs of addiction is that you need more of the drug to obtain the same condition, and you never get back to where you wanted to be originally? Doesn't marijuana have the same effect? In other words, if you're a heavy marijuana user, Do you require more product in the future? And how does it affect the body that way?
Yeah, and it's the same way, same mechanism when we talked about the dopamine for marijuana or tobacco or cocaine or heroin or opiates. It affects your dopamine. So if you're getting a dopamine surge and from whatever amount of marijuana you're using, your body says, okay, well, I'm not going to make my own dopamine. And now your new level of normal for needing dopamine is higher. And the more you use, the more your baseline dopamine require is higher, and it's a vicious circle.
So it
can go back to normal.
It's not just a mental addiction then. It winds up being a physical addiction.
It's a chemical addiction.
It's a chemical, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, that you need more and more. And then also, to muddy the waters even more for you guys, people don't like to talk about marijuana, but people like to talk about fentanyl and that we need to do something
right.
for fentanyl.
All right.
Right. 183 people a day dying from fentanyl.
Right.
So why do I talk about marijuana if I'm talking about fentanyl? And I can't not talk about it because every single patient I see who uses fentanyl or overdosed by accident on fentanyl, if they're lucky enough to reach me in the emergency department, I ask them to give me their journey into drugs. And invariably, their journey to drugs started at a very young age with marijuana. Mm. And so they started priming their brain. And sometimes they tell me like 9 years old, 10 years old. And that conversation is important because I tell them, if you've been training your brain to be on drugs, even if it's, they think it's just weed, but even if it's just weed, you've been training your brain to need drugs from that a young age. 1 week of Suboxone is not going to fix this problem for your opiate use disorder. And not everybody uses marijuana is going to die of fentanyl, or end up using fentanyl, but almost everybody, over 90% of people who are using fentanyl now on purpose or not on purpose started their journey with marijuana.
And we don't tell people that fentanyl's good for them, but we tell people marijuana's okay for
it's
you.
It's medicine.
It's medicine.
It's medicine.
And Officer Joe always tells everybody, when was the last time your doctor prescribed something that needed to be smoked?
Hello.
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Zero times.
Right. We have inhaled products, like people who have asthma, right? Then we have medications that are dispensed through your lungs and they help with asthma. And through the lung is a very effective delivery system of getting chemicals into your blood when you need them. So there was actually extensive research and almost product reaching the market for insulin. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to inhale your insulin instead of getting yourself shots, right? So they thought there was a lot of promise in that research. And the reason it hasn't gone anywhere is in order to get insulin to your lungs, you have to study your lung capacity, make sure that it's okay, that it doesn't hurt your lung. And that became too onerous to develop this insulin via the lung. So, almost never is smoking something good for you. Speaking of the lungs, should I keep going?
Sure. Got a couple minutes.
Let me ask you guys. They did a study. They did CAT scans. Well, you're going to guess the answer. But they did CAT scans. They compared CAT scans of people who smoke cigarettes to smoking marijuana. And which was worse?
I'm going for marijuana.
Your lungs look way worse from smoking marijuana than smoking cigarettes.
Why is that? Because you picture tobacco as just being a lot of tar, but
it's really heavily processed.
And
you look.
But probably also the way you smoke, you tend to hold your lung in.
Right.
Does it have anything to do with the other contaminants, like the heavy metals and the pesticides and that sort of thing? I mean, do they ever test for that?
Definitely. I don't know if they've been broken down to which pesticides and chemicals, but we know that the smoke from marijuana combustion and the ones from tobacco have the same toxins, same irritants, same carcinogens, also have the same risk for lung cancer. I treated a patient during COVID who had chest pain, 27 years old, came in with chest pain. We put him in the COVID unit. I saw him with my little astronaut gear, thinking he's got COVID. He didn't have COVID. He was just very anxious during the pandemic. smoking and smoking, and he popped his lung. Actually, have him on one of my early podcasts, and he talked about his experience, but not good. They also did another interesting study of secondhand smoke, and what do you think produces more secondhand smoke, a Marlboro cigarette, vaping, or a joint?
A joint.
You guys are so smart.
She walked us right into it. It took us 2 hours, but we got there. Dr. Lev, we have to jump off here. It's going to cut us off, but you know what?
Thank you.
We would love to do this again with you any old time. You've got a platform with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Lev has been our guest. You can find this recording at wethepeopleradio.us.
You rock, Doc. We love you.
Holy hell.
Now we can't hold back, like you know, we wish we could. Oh no, there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
Election time is upon us, and time to vote for candidates who understand how destructive marijuana is for our country, how it harms our youth, hurts our workforce, causing health and psychological problems. Perhaps you've witnessed evil politicians taking marijuana money. Well, there is an alternative. We endorse Jess Harris for Siskiyou County Supervisor. Jess has the knowledge, skills, and most importantly, the will to address illegal dope grows in Siskiyou. Jess has worked tirelessly developing sound policy to deal with the scourge of drugs in our communities. Vote Jess Harris, 2024. I'm Officer Joe, and I approve this message.